Hello, and welcome to the 18th episode of the Jam Bass Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Bernstein, and joining me shortly will be my co-host, Andy Kahn. AK and I will start off with the rundown of recent news stories. Next, we'll hear my tour stories chat with Fruition's Mimi Naja that was recorded last month at the High Sierra Music Festival in Quincy, California. The episode ends with the members of Spafford sitting down with Andy for a Quit My Day Job segment taped at this year's Summer Camp Music Festival in Chillicothe, Illinois. Now, let's get to the rundown. Phish is currently in the middle of their first tour of 2018. As a reminder, we taped these segments on Wednesday, so as of this recording, the band was 14 shows into summer tour. They have played... As of this recording, the night before, they played their first night in Camden. There's one night to go on Wednesday night, and we'll see what happens. I'm sure some crazy stuff will go down. And last week, SiriusXM launched Phish Radio. My favorite part of the channel so far has been Ask Trey, a question and answer session with guitarist Trey Anastasio. And Trey doesn't do much press, so to hear him talk about the band's past and present was particularly cool. He talked about how much fun the band is having and his role as a leader and the guy who picks the songs that Phish will play. His leadership often comes through in the music, but one of the trends that Andy and I noticed thus far has been a number of jams without typical Trey guitar-driven peaks. If you're looking for an example of this, look no further than the Down With Disease from Austin. The band toyed with the tempo throughout. I think it was like a 17-minute version, but it wasn't a linear build. All four members made great contributions to the jam, and no one member really took control. It was a real Team Phish effort, and I think it's a trend that's developed this tour, something that's really stood out. Andy, we've talked about this before, and we talked about patience is a good word to describe it, but there's not a perfect...
Yeah, I've been thinking about it a lot. One of the things I came up with was it's egalitarian. They're all four really communicating really well on stage. They're giving each other space. They're talking back and forth. And then it seems like they're all moving together as one, rather than somebody taking charge, taking a solo, leading, and everybody kind of following. It's this really strong groupthink that's been happening.
And I love, and it's not, it's a mix of that groupthink and egalitarian. That's a great word. I love it. Perfectly describes. And for instance, on Tuesday night, Phish played their first two shows in Camden, and they also played Down With Disease to start the second set that night. And there was this egalitarian brand of jamming that took hold throughout the jam. But then out of nowhere, in the middle of the 24-minute Down With Disease, Trey drove hard at a peak. But right after that was maybe a minute or two, and then they were right back to this Team Phish equal contribution style of jamming. So I think they're at their best when it's a mix of those two styles. And it's really a cool trend that we've seen play out. And so as of this point, there's like a week and a half left of tour before we get to the Curveball Festival in Watkins Glen. And I'll be attending. And for our next episode, I'm sure I'll be sharing my thoughts on what went down at Watkins. And then Phish has 2 weeks off before their annual Dix run. Andy, what are some of the trends that you've noticed so far this tour?
Well, aside from some of the things we talked about before, like the jamming style and the different tones Trey's been producing this tour, which we discussed in depth last episode, one thing that I've noticed from Trey is an often repeated phrase that seems to be popping up with more and more frequency. As far as I can tell, the riff dates back to at least the jam out of Chalk Dust Torture on December 29th at Madison Square Garden. I'm in the middle of some home renovation projects and painting and tearing up carpet and stuff, and so I've queued up a playlist of all the jammed out songs played so far this summer. And that's when I really took note of how often Trey's been playing this motif. A great example is the jam out of Soul Planet in the second set from the second night in Atlanta. But it's also been toyed with during recent performances of even like Theme from the Bottom and Reba. The light jam from just last night in Camden is also a perfect example of the repeated phrasing. It's super catchy, and it's been a springboard for some excellent and extended improvisation sequences. I love to hear that from this band. Here's what I'm talking about. This is from the Carini on the July 24th in San Francisco. Hey, Scotty, what are some of your favorite jams of the summer?
It's funny. On Friday, I asked that same question as the M-Blog Friday Conversation, and I received a variety of responses, which is always a good sign about what's gone down with Phish. At the same time, Phish fans can never really agree on anything. But I would bet a number of people would have answered differently had I asked that question after Friday. The Set Your Soul Free from San Francisco, the Austin Down with Disease, the Gorge Split Open and Melt, and the Forum Fuego are all up there, but the Ghost from that last Friday night in Alpharetta takes the cake from me. There are three completely different sections to the jam. First, you've got this bliss-filled major key affair, and then this swampy funk improv, and then an explosive climax. And the kicker is that it took place during the first set. I mean, the last 20-minute Ghost from a first set took place in 1999 in Albany. I mean, that's 19 years. So the Alpharetta first sets were all really up my alley, and it was just what I like to see. What else have you noticed this tour, Andy?
Well, I think one of the interesting things we've talked about, you know, we've talked a lot about Trey's tone changing, but also Paige continues to introduce new sounds and has really taken the lead on certain jams at points. I think it's, again, going back to that more egalitarian approach. He's found more room and space to assert himself at times. One thing Scotty and I, we've talked about a few times, is Trey seems to be leading a return to songs. That Ghost that you were just talking about was a perfect example of, after the 20 or so minutes of just exquisite jamming, all of a sudden, kind of out of nowhere, they're back to the theme of the song and playing the end of Ghost. And he's been doing that with a lot of different songs this summer, a lot of songs that don't normally have that happen to him. And there haven't been very many bust outs, just a handful of deep cuts coming out. Crowd Control came out last night for the first time, Show of Life for the first time. But for the most part, they've kind of been sticking to a tight repertoire. But they have developed some new songs, Set Your Soul Free and Soul Planet and Everything's Right, which have been getting the treatment, so to speak, getting some nice jams. Scotty, what else are you seeing this summer?
Well, Mike's got two new songs, and one of them is Infinite, and Phish played it for the second time on Tuesday night in Camden, and it's got a very synth-driven jam, almost in a way like I Always Wanted It This Way, but Mike's version of that. Definitely could be a springboard for improvisation in the way that Set Your Soul Free and Soul Planet and Everything's Right have been, but thus far, both versions of Infinite have been about 9 minutes. So we'll see what happens out of that. It was great to hear them play You Sexy Thing on Sunday night in Alpharetta, showed that the Baker's Dozens covers are back on the table. Hopefully that means Strawberry Letter 23 will get out there at some point. And I agree, it's been surprising, the lack of bust outs, but at the same time, when you've got that Baker's Dozen residency last year, they really played nearly all of the great songs in their repertoire. Every time they'll play something this tour, and I'll be like, oh, it's been a while since they played that. I'll look back, and they last played it at the Baker's Dozen. And just having so many different songs that they played, there wasn't much that they didn't get to that run. And, you know, you mentioned Page leading jams and varying his sound. And it brings me back to an interview that Trey did with Tom Marshall for Under the Scales a few months back. And while they were talking about the 20th anniversary of the story of the Ghost, it really wound up that they talked a lot about the Baker's Dozen. And Trey talked about how Page had made a change to his keyboard tech and some of the gear in his equipment, and that Page was really digging in a way that he hadn't before, and Trey was really getting off on that, and we've just seen the continuation of that trend through this tour. And we talked about Trey extensively about Trey changing up his tone. And as the tour goes on, I think he's getting more tasteful in his use of the Leslie / Watt out tone. It'll be interesting to see how that goes over the next few weeks. So there's
should be exciting.
Exactly. And so we'll see what happens. There's still the festival. Who knows what's going to happen there? And
a lot of shows and not a lot of days.
Yes, exactly. And Fish isn't all that's been going on over the past few weeks. In non-Fish news, Bob Weir put a new band together. Bob Weir and Wolf Bros. And this band features John Was on bass and longtime Rat Dog member Jay Lane on drums. And the trio, they're going to start a 19-stop tour on October 16th, which Deadheads know happens to be Bobby's birthday. And the tour starts at the Grand Sierra Resort and Casino in Reno. Bobby and the trio then head to the West Coast, and then the Pacific Northwest, Southwest, and Colorado. And then the three-piece celebrates Halloween in Chicago, plays Nashville and Louisville, and then they've got a bunch of dates in the Northeast. And let's look for Bob and the Wolf Bros to perform songs from the Grateful Dead and what Bob has called his quote-unquote back pages. I love to see Bob continuing to try out new bands and formats. Over the past few years, he hasn't been content to just stick with Dead & Company. Both Andy and I, we were both big fans of Weir's duo tour with Phil Lesh earlier this year, and I'm excited to see what comes of this new project. Don Was is an absolute legend who's performed with and produced a who's who of musicians, including his work as producer of the Rolling Stones dating back nearly 25 years. Should also mention Don Was laid the groundwork for Dead & Company by introducing Bobby and Mickey Hart to John Mayer at the Capitol Records building back in 2015. The three-piece is going to focus on theater, so it'll also be nice to see Bobby in more intimate settings than the stadiums and arenas that Dead & Company plays. And Don Was hasn't performed much publicly with Bob Weir, so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But he did serve as musical director at the Dear Jerry tribute to Jerry Garcia that was held at Meriwether Post Pavilion in 2015. Bob played on a handful of songs that night, including Friend of the Devil, that also featured Grace Potter. Let's check out a little bit of that Friend of the Devil. AK, can you fill us in on some of the other tours that have been announced recently?
Absolutely. Bob Dylan announced his first tour of 2018. Dylan will be on the road from early October through mid-November and is focusing on the lower portion of America. Mo also sticks to the South for a 10-date winter tour that begins on November 28th and runs through December 9th. Then there's Michael Franti and Spearhead, who recently confirmed an East Coast tour scheduled in October. Jennifer Hartswick is coming out this fall with a new solo album titled Nexus, and she's teaming up with longtime collaborator Nick Casarino, who also appears on the album, for a 13-date Nexus tour in September and October. Speaking of new albums, the John Butler Trio has a new one coming out in September, and they'll embark on a 20-date North American tour starting on November 16th. On the Jamgrass side of things, Yonder Mountain String Band returns to the road in October, while guitarist Billy Strings continues to add dates to his biggest headlining tour yet. Bands are starting to announce their New Year's Eve plans, as Humphreys McGee will return to the Tabernacle in Atlanta for four nights to end the year. Meanwhile, the Disco Biscuits are switching it up by bringing their New Year's run to Philadelphia for the first time since 2010. The band will play four hometown shows at the Fillmore. Drive-By Truckers, Pigeons Playing Ping Pong, Ween, The Wood Brothers, and Particle are just a few of the other acts who have announced tour dates in the past few weeks. As always, head to Jambase for full details on all of these tours and more. And that's it for the rundown. Stay tuned for Scotty's Tour Stories interview with Mimi Naja. Brother, take my keys, please. Can I operate? The guys, they have been cruel to me. I said the hour is too late. Need the feet of the ground below. Welcome back to the Jambase Podcast. I'm Scott Bernstein, and I'm here with Mimi Naja. Is that how your name is?
Naja, yeah.
Naja, excellent. Of Fruition. And we're here. This is Thursday of High Sierra in Quincy, California. And Fruition doesn't play until Friday and Saturday. But Mimi, you're here early, getting to check out the other side of things.
That's right. We actually don't play till Saturday.
Oh, even better.
Yeah, it really is. We love High Sierra. We've been here many times. And yeah, when I saw we were booked Saturday, Sunday, I thought I should come early and get my fangirl on, get my rocks off before it's down to brass tacks, you know?
Exactly.
Tough job, you know?
Somebody's got to do it. And what are some of the bands that you're most excited to see?
Well, I mean, the set I just saw, which was like the, essentially the, you know, warm-up set for myself and most of us this weekend, was the John Stickley Trio. Just ripped it up at Vaudeville just now, right before I met you. Super stoked.
Excellent.
Yeah, I mean, who else am I seeing? I get to see Ernest Ranglin later.
Oh, that seems to be towards the top of everyone's list.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of, for me, I mean, I know he's like a hero for a lot of people, but for me, it's just like kind of a name that was always there that like I didn't actually like come up in his songbook and his discography, but yeah,
I'm excited to see him.
We're in the realm of some legends. I'm very excited
exactly.
for that. Yeah, there's so much great music today. Turquoise later. We're going to see Ila Bamba in about 45 minutes.
And you were telling me earlier that you booked her for
early days in Portland. Luz Elena is a magical woman, and I worked at this little place that is no longer called the Chaos Cafe.
Okay.
I was learning all the skills. I didn't know what I was doing, but I was like booking and running sound and running food and serving beer at this tiny little amazing little hippie joint. I didn't know what I was doing, but we were all learning together, you know, and yeah, she played solo there a few times, and her full project is just, I mean, it was already magic, but you know, that was 10, 12 years ago, and it's just like fleshed out into really, really beautiful worldly stuff.
And after hearing your description of it, I'm won over. There was another band I was going to see, but I definitely now want to see La Bamba. So
yeah,
that's what we're going to do after this.
Yeah, your hardest problem at High Sierra is the crossover. Like, oh, I have to miss this act to see this
exactly.
We're living pretty large.
First world problems.
Indeed.
Well, so the name of the segment is Tour Stories, and that touring is something that you are very familiar with. And rather than start at the beginning, I figured we'd start kind of towards
the more recent times. Yeah. And I, you know, I've been following your career for a long time, and I saw that you guys were opening for Jack Johnson. Yeah. And it seemed like you got to play with him a bunch, and it seemed like a cool experience. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Yeah, it was absolutely cool. Like, it was larger than life and mellow and cool at the same time. Like, Jack and his whole crew, that's their vibe. It's very professional, but so down to earth and so low key. And yeah, we did 5 shows with Jack, and you know, within 2 minutes of meeting him, he's inviting us to sit in. We sat in with him for 2 songs every night in these large sold out amphitheaters. It was like so beautiful. He was so trusting. Like, once we jammed for a few minutes, he's like, oh, these guys play, they just listen to the tune, let's play. He was just very open and loving and cool, just very cool, man.
So it was everything that you'd hoped it would be,
it was beyond.
Oh, I mean, that's what I like to hear.
I knew he was very, like, he's very eco-conscious, and like, it's not just like some like visage like front thing. It's not like I'm this surfer guy. It's like, no, his whole operation, like, they live their truth, and they like, they like keep the impact down, and they donate a ton of money to offset what humans are doing to the earth. It's really beautiful. Yeah, it was everything I thought it would be, and even cooler.
That is great. And, you know, also speaking with really the current times, you've done a lot of touring with Daniel Rodriguez. And I had a chance, I saw a video, I think you filmed it backstage in Boston, where
Correct,
it was This Is Life. And it was such a beautiful song. And I couldn't find much information about that song or what had been going on with you and Daniel. Can you tell us a little bit about
it? Right. So, yeah, that's all Dan's tune. Like, yeah, you know, the reason that you can't find any info is because it's all brand new, you know.
Okay.
Like, his like long-standing, beautiful, immaculate career with Elephant Revival, you know, they just kind of closed that chapter for now of the Elephant phase, and that was perfect timing. We got really lucky as friends and fans, you know, and professionals, colleagues with Dan to put Dan in the van. Yeah, we got to do several weeks of touring with Dan, and we've all respected his songwriting and just cherished his friendship for many, many years. So,
and would he
to
open?
Hear him busting, yeah, he would open solo, okay. You know, and we would sit in as a band for a few tunes.
Very cool.
And this gentle giant got in our van, you know, it was really great. But he has a whole new fresh songbook. That's what songwriters do, you know. I love that tune, This Is Life. It's a great tune.
You could be a selfish fool, somehow not be selfish enough. Your glass could be half full, but you've already drank way too much. This is life. This is life. This is life. This is life.
Yeah, that was such a treat for all of us. Like, it was good timing in Dan's life for his comrades to swoop him in.
Sure.
And it was refreshing for us too to have like new energy in the van, like a loved one that is a pro, that is sweet, that is fun. Like, we're all together all the time, so like to just add one little fresh influence, like, it changes everyone's energy, and it was all really positive.
And how many people generally tour with Fruition these days? Who is it besides the band that's on every gig?
So it's the 5-piece band, okay. And our main man, the one and only TLP, Terry Lapointe, our sound man, he's the shit.
And you know, he shares those recordings so quickly, which us fans really appreciate.
That's awesome to hear. Hell yeah. Yeah, he's 6th member all the way. So yeah, you've already got 6 folks in the van, you know. So
right.
Throw a 6-foot whatever he is, Dan in there
giant.
Too. Put Dan in the van. Yeah, it was close quarters, and it works fine because we love each other.
Oh, that is incredible.
And yeah, it really is, man.
And do you expect that you'll be doing more with Dan in the future?
Without a doubt.
Excellent.
Yeah, and actually he's been working on his solo record, and Tyler Thompson, drummer from Fruition, is a fantastic engineer. He's engineered plenty of our stuff before. And they've been working on Dan's record with Jeff Leonard, our bass player, and Jay went in and popped in on some guitar, too. It's like all very, very family stuff. And, yeah, look out for Dan's solo record coming ASAP.
I am excited for that.
I'm really excited, too.
And, you know, speaking of family, that seems like something that's so important to Fruition. And one of the ways that I was introduced to your music was through having you guys open for Green Sky Bluegrass. And they recently played a festival. And how was your experience
at camp? They threw their own fest.
The inaugural Camp Green Sky.
Yeah, which is like totally a dream, and they totally deserve it, and it was beautiful. Like it was very well curated, you know. The acts that were chosen were really tasty and really like not what you would expect. Just like, you know, this is our job, rolling from festi to festi, you know, like the same scenes of the communities you build, you expect the same sounds, and they really brought some like interesting folks in the mix, you know. They brought like Mike Gordon out and Jeff Tweedy and the War and Treaty, like interesting blends that you wouldn't maybe wouldn't expect from like the jammy grassy scene.
Sure.
It was very cool. And I'm stoked for those guys. We're like ever grateful, and we're forever friends. And
I mean, it dates back years and years at this
years
point.
Years and years. It's a trip to like think like, man, we've opened for those guys like literally over 100 times, and like we're not done doing that. You know? Like we're in love. Like we've learned so much, we've had the best times, and like, you know, our trajectories are like they're like paralleled at different tiers, you know, like we've watched their growth, and like it's expansive and mind blowing as fuck. And our same like little growth pattern, it's the same like trajectory, but just like little bros, like right. Little siblings, you know. It's really amazing.
That's
we're nothing but grateful and stoked for the future with those dudes forever.
Will you ride beside me now? Have I frightened all the words away? Not out of control. Not out of control.
And touring with them, are they fun to tour with? Is there anything that you could share? Give us a little background on your experience touring with...
Oh, man, not safe for work. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, sometimes. No, they're the epitome of fun and professional, you know, straight up. Like...
They'll have a fun time getting there.
Oh, dude, exactly. Their whole team just makes it so it's just like fluid, and like the work is first, and it's rocking, and everything being dialed, and like that being like the perfect show first enables you to loosen up and party, you know. Yeah. And their whole team is just pro as hell, and I continue to learn so much from them, you know.
And you've sat in with them so many times. Is most of the time, is it a pretty fly by the seat of the pants? Is it something you work out hours before, or is it a mix?
It all depends. But you know, it's usually like, you know, prep and plan. But then this is good for some tour story stuff.
All
it's
right,
like,
here we go.
You know, so much happens, it's hard to recall them. But that was a good prompt question. the most loose one, the best shit on Green Sky Fruition run was when we were supporting them at the Rex Theater for 2 nights in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
And it was Bruza's birthday, so
Bruza, the guitar player.
Yeah, yep. They wanted to loosen up a little. So what we did on night two for Bruza's birthday was we did a little band scramble. So So the bass players of each band do a little rock, paper, scissors, and you like choose, you're like choosing your team, like you're on the playground, like, you know, and then they've got to build their band from each band. So it was a mix-up, mash-up band, and we each did a little mini set. You know.
Oh, that's amazing. Like schoolyard pitch.
There was T-Rex, and then there was Headliner. I was obviously in Headliner.
Of course you were.
We played Freebird. No, we really did. It was amazing.
And so once you had the band's pick, then you went about figuring out what songs you would play.
Yeah. And Bruza was on drums. It was dope.
That's quite a birthday that
yeah,
he
no
had.
Doubt, right? Singing some Freebird while you're playing drums on your birthday in a mix-up, mash-up, scramble band. Yeah, it was pretty magic.
Oh, that's
and
great.
Ridiculous.
And, you know, was it actually too far from that time? A lot of people, after, sadly, Tom Petty passed away, I believe it was October 1st.
It was the 2nd.
Okay,
very
it was the 2nd.
Very good, though. Very good.
Close.
I'll tell you why I know that, but yes.
Do you want to tell me, or, do you want me to continue intro?
No, finish your intro. I liked it. You're doing a great job.
Thank you. So a lot of people covered his music, and it was a beautiful thing. But Fruition really took it to the next level. I don't know if it was 10 or 12 shows. You just kept amazing songs from his back catalog coming, and you put your own spin on it for the most part. And it was a beautiful thing to look each day. And again, because we were talking about Terry Lapointe, the incredible sound guy, he got the recordings up so quickly. I was able to follow along, and it was like a story that you guys kind of told about his life. So I'd love to hear from your perspective about how that all went down.
Yeah, it's cool to hear you're in too and know that, like, the turnaround time is clutch in moments like that where you're like honoring someone. That's cool to hear your side, you know, because in real time it was like this. We had a few days off. We were like up at a little B&B in No Place on Lake Michigan. It was beautiful and magic. We were outside of Muskegon even, which is like barely a town, you know,
right,
in terms of numbers, you know. But we were close to Grand Haven. So here's the thing. The reason I know it's October 2nd is because that happens to be Gillian Welch's birthday. And so when I saw we had this window of time off, I'm like, Jay, check this out. Because Jay and I go way back. We've done a lot of duo gigs, just two guitars, two voices. And, like, Gillian was our first, like, as a duo, as like musical little partners, diving in all the way and like just playing Dave and Gil songs. So I'm like, Jay, on our days off, it's Gillian's 50th birthday on October 2nd.
Okay.
Let's go do a duo show. Let's like find a small place around here, like a little brew pub. So we played at Grand Armory, which is an amazing brewery and a great space in Grand Haven, Michigan. So we woke up that day to do our Gillian thing. I'm like taking a walk along the lake, and then I get the little boop on my phone that Tom Petty died, and we're crushed. So we do this Gillian tribute. You know, we play like a couple solo original songs a piece. We play a couple Petty tunes, and then we play Gil and Dave all night. And once we'd done some Petty, it's like, cool, tour's picking back up. Let's just Petty every night. We love this song. Let's do this one. And then once you're like three nights in, it's like, wait, let's just keep this going, dude. He's an endless catalog of perfect American rock and roll music.
Yep.
It's like, let's just keep going. Refreshing challenge for us while it was like an homage, while it was an honoring of the legacy of this great rock and roll music. So it was thrilling for everyone.
Oh, that's incredible.
And, it's still not done. It's not done.
There's still
so many covers that we still want to hit of Petty.
Right.
That, dude, it's never done. God bless him and his songbook.
He left.
He's a rock and roll hero.
He sure is. And I love that you honored him.
We'll keep it going, man. And there's a Petty set here.
Exactly. Guitarmageddon, I believe, is honoring
We're
going to
be a part of that as well.
Oh, terrific. Know?
But it's like, that's kind of like, get in line. I hope every guitarist or singer is just like, chomping at the bit to get in on that set too, man. Let's all just sing a song.
Exactly.
Yeah, buddy.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Mimi.
This is great.
Certainly no one knows about touring like you do. You've put in plenty of time over the past few years. I'm excited to see what the future holds.
Thank you so much.
Terrific.
It's nice chatting with you.
This is Andy Kahn. I'm backstage at Summer Camp Music Festival with all four members of Spafford. They just came off stage and taking some time to talk to us. This segment is Quit My Day Job, so we're going to get all four of the guys here to talk about what they were doing for a living before they became professional musicians. Let's start by having everybody introduce themselves.
Hey, I'm Jordan Fairless, and I'm the bass player.
Hey, what's up? I'm Brian. I play guitar.
Hi, I'm Cameron. I play the drums.
I'm Red. I play keys.
All right, thanks, guys. Thanks very much. So, is there anybody who wants to go first?
I'll go.
I'll start with you, Red.
I was working.
Wait, first of all, let's set the stage. Time and place.
Time and place. Time was 2016, end of the year, right? Just right after the breakout tour. I was working at a medical facility, and I had a great job, really cushy job. They were really cool with me taking time off to go tour and stuff like that. And I didn't really quit my job. They knew that I was on short time. I gave them like a 2 month notice, like, hey, I'm going to be leaving in a couple of months. And
so, what were your responsibilities there?
I helped out with transferring patients around and making sure, you know, patients would get to different appointments that they had to get to and stuff like that. And you know, so I don't know. I was asked in a meeting. I was asked what I thought of certain new policies that they had. And my boss said, I really want to know your opinion. And apparently when a boss says, I really want to know your honest opinion, it doesn't necessarily mean I want to know your honest opinion. So I gave it, and he said, yeah, you're good. You don't have to come in ever again. Actually, I did technically have a job for a couple months after that. I like went and worked retail for the holidays.
Kohl's.
Yeah, I worked at Kohl's. It was. They offered me a bunch of money to do it, and I was like, it's nice to have a paycheck until we go on tour.
What were you doing there?
I got super discounts.
Kohl's is your favorite place to shop.
It is honestly one of my favorite places to shop.
They made you a lifetime customer.
Yeah. No, I got the shirt in Spain. Oh, Espana.
Really?
Yeah.
I mentioned it had somewhat of like
You said Mayan vibe. That's a different continent. Say but Mayan. It's similar, I guess.
I mean, eventually one day they kind of met up at some point.
Sort of. Yeah. Way back, similar ancestors. Yeah. Way back
Post-Crusades. Yes. Yeah, you know? Yeah, that's what kind of shirt it is. Very nice.
So, so I worked there, and I worked in the... In the shipping department, so people would like go online and order something,
okay,
and I would like fulfill the order, and they would come and pick it up at the store. I did that for a little while, and then they wanted to promote me and like give me all these promotions and stuff like that. And the day that they were trying to give me a promotion, I was like, by the way, I'm not going to be here for the rest of the week. In fact, I'm not going to be here ever again.
And was that because you had a tour plan?
Yeah, that's because that was when we went out on the road for the first time with Humphreys McGee.
Yeah.
And
what's up, boys?
And went out and toured with them, which was an amazing experience. And
that was in 2017?
Beginning of 2017, we went out on the road with them for 18 dates.
Cool.
So that's my story when I quit / lost my job. So,
and you've never gone back. You're not looking to go back to Kohl's anytime soon.
I'm not going back to Kohl's.
Do you ever try to get the discount still?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Why wouldn't I?
That's how you get the wardrobe for the band.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, at least for myself. You know, you got to find like solid black T-shirts somewhere. Sure, you know,
I go to Target.
You go to Target.
Yeah.
Target.
Did you ever work at Target?
No.
So Brian, tell us about your. Final job.
Yeah, I feel like the beginning of this story starts in 2014 when we got off of a 30-day tour. And I came home, and I had 25.
Where's home?
What?
Where's home?
Home was in Arizona.
Okay. Where in Arizona?
This was in Prescott, Arizona. Okay. Yes. And I came home to my girlfriend at the time, and I had $25 in my bank account. And we just got off a tour, and it was not really all what it was cracked out to be. I mean, we had a nice time driving out there, but nobody really showed up to any of the shows, and you know, we had a lot of like vehicle troubles and all this stuff. So either way, you know, it was rough times back then. And I got home and I only had $25 to my name. So I was like, man, I got to get a job, like, you know, working at Starbucks or just something to like make some money, you know, cause I was doing guitar lessons, but working with children sometimes is not, I don't have the patience for it. I'm just not that type of person. And, so either way, so I went to a local store, is an e-cigarette shop, and in town, because those were really like popping off in 2014.
Definitely,
so I jumped in with these guys, and I have what some people may call a little bit of a nicotine addiction, and so I gravitated towards the e-cigarettes, just like any like-minded nicotine indulgent would, and you know, found myself like at that place a little bit, and became friends with the owners and all that stuff, and. You know, so
an
like,
early vapor,
huh?
Were you an early vapor?
So now I'm like vaping. Yeah, I was early. I was like a 2000.
Early adapter.
I was like a 2012 vapor. Oh, so wow. I was like, yeah, doing the switch. So I was already going for a few years, and that was like the local shop in town. So you know, went there and you know, started working for these guys, and it was great. And basically, that didn't end. You know, all that it was like really supposed to end. Yeah, you know, but. But they moved me like up. I was actually the president of the company, what they called
me.
And I had an office.
That's nice for a resume,
and
right?
A fish tank. You know, I started at $8 an hour with this guy, basically just like working on the computer, working on like some Facebook stuff, like showing him how to run social media. Like we were running our Spafford social media because it was just like fun and engaging, right. And stuff like that. And just, you know, so either way. But yeah, that's what I did. That was the last job.
So what was the wardrobe for that?
Oh, it was casual. I mean, I showed up in a button down, like, you know.
Business casual.
Yeah, like business casual, like nice plaids and stuff like that. You
not quite what you're wearing on stage these days.
No, but there was, you know, it was a cool company. It was young, you know. Totally. So like everybody.
Well,
was,
and you're it's
everybody
vaping.
Was really young, yeah, and totally. it was just kind of like these guys got really lucky with what they did, and you know, and it was like, you know, tried to fuel the locals there and stuff like
so
that.
So how did you exit?
So I exited terribly. I mean, really. I mean, I'm pretty sure.
So maybe not the resume builder after all.
Yeah, like I got like fired and I quit and I like, you know, and then they hired me back and then I went in there and like, you know, I had a conversation with the dude and he started yelling at me like the first day and I just looked at him and I was like, fuck you. Like I'm
fuck you, yeah, cool, fuck you.
Yeah, right.
I'm out.
Yeah. Throws the burger in the dude's face, right? It's like and I mean it was just it was like really weird. It was a really weird exit, to be honest with you. And we went out on the breakout tour, and basically I was pulled in the office. And I was told that I had a decision to make.
Oh yeah.
And it was
the ultimatum.
And it was the ultimatum. And I said, well, this sounds like an ultimatum, and I don't like ultimatums or anybody who gives them to me. So I mean, and no chance. I am going to depart from here and going to pursue my passion and what we've created with the band.
That made the decision for you.
Yeah, there was no doubt about it. I mean, I was having my cake and eating it too with this company for a little while. And you know, I mean, these guys remember what it was like. It was awful. It was really rocky for the band because, you know, for me, I was pulled in two directions.
Right.
And, I mean, until you can quit your job, you're pulled in two directions.
Definitely.
You know, until you can. And, you know, it's still not been easy since then, you know, but it's better than working at that fucking place. So, you know, I'm pumped for the decisions that I've made and, you know, the bet on myself and believe in myself and these guys and, like, what we're doing and, you know, and like
seems to be working.
Yeah, there's nothing better than that.
See, a good type of work.
Nothing better. Yeah, this is a blast.
That's
yeah,
great.
Yeah, absolutely.
So who's next? Let's go on to Jordan.
I'll just go ahead and do it. Yeah. Huh? Start in 2014 at the end of our like first tour, we got back and everyone was broke and we didn't make any money and we had to pay for a bus that we were already in debt for and it broke and we had to pay to fix it and do all this stuff. And so we got back and, you know, no one got paid, the band's in debt, all this stuff's going on. And I'd been doing our sound since probably like 2012. I started doing our sound maybe 2011 even. So when we got back, I like knew the guy up in Flagstaff. Flagstaff's about an hour and a half north of Prescott, that was running the Orpheum Theater in Flagstaff, and he needed stagehands. And so I just started like doing load in and load outs. And
were you living in Flagstaff?
I was driving up and down to Flagstaff, okay. And then so I eventually moved to Flagstaff.
Yeah.
And like it was a rough period. Everyone kind of had to like actually go do stuff to pay the bills. We weren't in school anymore. No more financial aid, no more student loans, nothing like that. Like, we were making it.
The payments start kicking
in. Well, there was a point where, like, Brian and I were in Prescott, and each of us was in, like, five bands. And, like, we were just in school and doing gigs and financial aid. And, like, I was making it. And then all of a sudden, one by one, got rid of all the bands because we just wanted to do Spafford all the time. And then school ends, and then you do your tour. It's like, all right, we're doing this tour. And then all of a sudden, it's like, okay, I now have negative $300, and I got to figure out how I'm going to pay my rent. So I started driving up to Flagstaff, and I started just pushing cases, doing load in and load out, and then started training how to do like monitors and lighting in front of house. And then eventually, a smaller club, the Orpheum's like 1,200 people, I think, and a smaller club.
Is that like
club.
A theater?
It's a theater, yeah, the Orpheum like Theater in Flagstaff. Yeah, it's an amazing place. But that got me ready for towards the end of 2014. I took over at the Green Room, which was a 600 person club in Flagstaff, and so I was full time like production manager, front of house, monitor, all that stuff. And I was doing like, I don't know, five or six shows a week sometimes.
And you're still gigging with Spafford at the time.
Still gigging, and like as long as because I was the production manager, so I could schedule people to work for me, and I had like, you know, four other sound guys, but. It was just such a juggle, and sometimes I would just get stuck. Like, I like literally can't get anyone to cover me, and I'm stuck here. And like, it just became such a hassle, and like doing that all the time. And
so, in that period of time, did you guys ever have to cancel Spafford gigs, or
we had never canceled
the other job? Never got in the way.
No.
Somehow made it through. Yeah. I had my boss like at that place wanted to kill me a few times.
I'm sure
because yeah. I had to put. It's like, dude, I can't be here and I can't get someone competent for what you're willing to pay. And so you're going to get this guy that doesn't know what he's doing, but I'm sorry, you can afford him.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like I, you know, was on a like weekly thing and I would get paid for like extra work. So I was cool with it. But when you try to get another competent sound engineer and then you tell him you're going to, like, you're going to pay me how much? It's like, no, I'm good, dude. I have to do monitors, lighting, and front of house. And you're, no, I'm good. And so it was always like a struggle to find people and, you know, work until 3:30 in the morning.
Definitely.
Like, just, it was tough. And that was like, the day jobs almost like killed the band, you know? Yeah. And then it transitioned out of that. And finally, I think getting back from the breakout tour in 2016 was kind of the catalyst for a lot of us of like, get back. And it's like, hey man, it was the same as Red. I'm like, yo, you got me until the end of the year and then I'm done. Like, I can't
make or break,
I can't
time.
Keep doing this. I'm going on tour full time. And then, you know, the first month went by and I'm like, I haven't seen any resumes. You got any other sound guys you're looking at? Like, and finally there just came a point, there was some kid that was training and then they would call me to come in like, oh, this is going on. And finally I just stopped answering the phone. I'm like, you've really? Got someone, you're paying him, I've told you I'm leaving. And I just didn't talk to them for probably like 2 weeks because it's like, okay, you guys are trying to call me to come in for free. I already trained someone. I'm not a salaried employee.
It's like erasing your expenses.
I've already like busted like my ass for this place. Like, I can't. It's like there was no way other than me just kind of like, I finally had to walk away. And it was like, it was, you know, pretty sweet. It was, like, I enjoyed the job. It was fun.
So when was that you finally...
That was 2016. In 2016.
Do you ever go back?
What?
To the have you ever been back to
Oh,
the,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still get employee prices. They're cool,
so,
man.
So no bridges were burned.
No, and now
the two,
guy...
After the 2 weeks,
the guy that they were nervous
cool.
about, he's still there.
Oh,
now
okay.
It's his full-time
so it
gig.
Out well for
and
him
it
too.
Worked out great. And awesome. They, it's just... It's scary, you know?
No
like,
doubt.
And I was there when these two guys bought the place. So I was, like, their only sound guy that they'd known. And I, like... redid all the sound system mm-hmm. and did all the stuff. And then it's like, the only way you can learn how this place works is knowing how much of a piece of shit it is. And you have to figure that out by having stuff break while you're working. And that would happen to me all the time. And I'm like, these guys are yelling at me. I'm like, I'm sorry, the monitor amp just fried, dude. Like, I'm sorry. And so that was it. It's like, all right, I'm, you know, go walk away.
Right.
It's hard though. It's like, oh, you want a smooth exit when you're leaving that day job, but
sometimes you
there's
just
a lot
rip
of
the band-aid off.
Well, there's a lot of like tension when, you know, it's like Brian said, like, all right, you got a choice to make here. It's like, well, that's not a choice for me. If you have to ask, if you're asking me to give up my band, like, then obviously this relationship is not, you know, what I needed here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I thought you supported
me.
Our
dynamics
like,
need to change.
Well, yeah, the whole time I'm working at the Green Room and doing all this stuff, and it's like, oh, yeah, tour, it's great. But then also it's like every time I would leave, I'd be on the phone the whole time because everything falls apart as soon as I leave. Like,
hard to be away.
It's hard to be away, and it's like, but now, you know, quitting the day job is the secret to really pushing it further. So
I bet.
It was a great moment.
So last but not least,
this is actually funny this is funny because this time last year Cam gets a call from me and Jordan and we're like, what are you doing? And whatever job he had, we said, you have to quit it.
Oh wow.
So there was no choice because we knew what it took to do this. By this time we were already a year of quitting our jobs.
So
to paint the picture there, you know, what were you doing, Ken?
Yeah, so this is exactly a year ago, right? Your first gig was
today, last year, summer camp. Yep. Really, 2 weeks before today is when I got the call.
Okay. And where were you at the time?
I was up in Woodside, California, Northern California, working at a hunter jumper horse show where I would do parking and security and sometimes jump in and do manual labor.
Oh, I thought you were going to say jump in and do horse jumping.
No. Not jumping in, not me. So I would, you know, it just varied on the job. I was already, you know, used to traveling and living out of a bag, you know, most of the year and mm-hmm. just, you know, doing that whole gig. So
how did you get involved with that?
My uncle worked for Chris Coleman. He owns the horse show in he runs the horse show in Scottsdale, Arizona, where that's the first place I worked at is Westworld.
Okay.
Scottsdale.
Oh, okay, okay.
So they have the events. They have, you know, they have multiple events there. Sometimes they have rodeos. Sometimes mm-hmm. I never did any of that, but
yeah.
They had those big events, and then our show would come in. It's a seasonal thing, so it's kind of like this.
Gotcha.
Like the festivals come
comes in.
In.
Yeah, right, right.
It's the same date every year, so mm-hmm. it's just you already know on your calendar in a year in advance. So, so sometimes I'll do manual labor. Sometimes I'll do hospitality, and you know, setting up the VIP tents and all that
Jack
stuff.
Jack of all trades.
Everything, yeah. Parking, security, all that stuff. So
how long were you doing that before you got the call?
I did that for 6 years. I started
oh, wow.
when I was 17, and I worked right up until I was 23.
And were you involved with the horses at all?
No.
No.
I've never worked with the horses. So there's so many different, like, subgroups working at the horse
Definitely,
show that
yeah.
have very specific jobs. So, mm-hmm. like, the grooms taking care of the horses and feeding them, and they're on their own, you know, day rates, and
yep.
you know, everybody's independent contractor and the
gotcha.
Thing. So it's there's tons of different.
You stay
jobs
away, yeah.
So I just did the I just set up the jumps and all the
gotcha.
Fun stuff, playing in the dirt.
So what was your reaction when you got the call then?
I mean, I was just kind of like struck by it. I don't know.
How did you know the guys?
Shocked. Well, I mean, I started playing in bars when I was. I started playing in bars when I was like 17, and you know, I think Red's actually seen my old band a couple times,
okay.
you know, and up in Prescott and Tempe and all over Arizona before we started like traveling and everything, and you know, they just knew of me. They're like, he can play, and I actually, you know, hosted a improv jam night one night with my uncle. Cool. He's the bass player in my old band.
Same uncle?
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And so we hosted this improv thing, and like. We just basically invite whoever we want. We ran it. We're just like, yeah, let's just make sure it's awesome. We invite all good musicians to come in and just shred. You know, we'll have like mm-hmm. two guitar players and two bass players to swap out. Mm-hmm. Sometimes have like, you know, trombone player or something, yeah. just weird stuff, you know, keyboard. So Red calls me or messaged me on Facebook one night and was like, he's like, oh, is this like open invite? Like, could I come in, like sit in maybe or whatever? And I was like, oh yeah. He's like, do you mind if I bring the boys? And I was like, yeah, sure. So they ended up all coming and jamming that night. And
was that a rehearsal?
That was the first time that we actually ever played.
Before we left for Humphrey's tour.
Yeah, this is before they left
that's
for
true.
Their tour. Yeah, and
that's
I was,
true.
You know.
And
so
that's,
this is.
Yeah.
So would that be the first time before have you played together?
That was well.
I actually
all four of you
ever actually played that night at the same time.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I think I was like on the guitar like for a while, and you know, and
so it was musical chairs. That
yeah,
never,
Cam was like switching drums
finally
with other people, and he was playing trees.
Yeah.
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 It happened mid jam
because I wanted to play with him. You
yeah.
know, like that's you know, yeah. I mean,
get a feel.
Well, right. I mean, he's listen to the fucking kid. I mean, he's a great drummer, you know? Sure. So I really wanted to just, I was having fun up there, you know? So when I got done, like Jordan didn't want to play with me, you know? Like he was letting me have mine with the new kid over here, you know? But we were just having fun.
And then it was his turn.
And then it was his turn. So when I got done, then he went up and I was like, hey, he sounds really good.
Compare notes after.
Yeah, yeah. It was just like fun to watch your, you know, member of your band, like, mm-hmm. you know, play with somebody else and it sounds good, you know? So that's what was going on that night.
So did that end up kind of serving as the rehearsal? Like
that just served as the conversations open, you know, that when
but I mean were you thinking about that when you finally did make the call
when we needed a guy there yeah. was one guy
that
and
was
it was him there yeah. was a, there was nobody else that was in the running
like we're jamming, I'm that's like, it if I ever did have to play with someone else this kid could be all
right. Right and I'm like man like yeah this kid is killing it right now
put
like
that
was
in the back,
really
keep that file that away
yeah
just
like
in
you
case.
Know yeah I played like you know music locally my entire life you yeah. know like you don't really run into people like that you
right.
know like
somebody has chops you know
he's a diamond in the rough man and yeah. we just you know we're lucky enough to scoop him up and bring this kid on this wild ride for this entire year like
so how's it been the last year
oh it's been great
and
jam packed just super busy
how did the horse place take it
So my boss, Chris Coleman, you know, he just gave me the biggest blessing. I mean, it was basically the 2 weeks before summer camp last year, you know, I just picked three songs right off the bat. We went through them and Brian's like, all right, enough of that. Let's just go outside and talk. And he just like, it's like, are you in this or not? And I was like, yes. And he's like, well, you better start making some calls. So first person I called was Chris Coleman, my boss at the time. And he's like, hey man, I get it. Follow your dreams. Like, he's like, no bridges are broken here. He's like, but when you guys sell out Madison Square Garden, I better have tickets for me and my family. He's like, you got it.
That's awesome. So,
yeah. And super nice about
that's
it. Really, yeah.
That's cool.
All right, guys.
Yeah.
I think we got them all.
All right.
Appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time. And you guys are headed to Red Rocks tomorrow, right?
Yeah. Tomorrow, yeah.
Yes.
Is that the first time at Red Rocks?
Yeah.
Yep.
That's pretty exciting stuff. Congratulations on that.
Thanks. Enjoy. Right.
Safe travels, all right? Yeah, yes, sir. Thanks for the time. Much. Cheers, guys.
Thanks.
That's a wrap for the 18th episode of the Jambase Podcast. Thanks to Mimi and the guys from Spafford for chatting with us. And of course, thanks to you for listening and to Telefunken for the killer microphones. Episode 18 has been produced by Jake Alexander, and as usual, features theme music from Clangin' and Bangin'. You can subscribe to the Jambase Podcast through your favorite podcast provider, including iTunes, Google Play Music, and Stitcher. We love comments and feedback, so please either leave a comment or shoot us a note at podcast@jambase.com. One final thought before we go see live music.